Well, today we welcome to the program Sean Glennon, the Community Development Director from the City of Quincy's Planning and Community Development Department, to kind of continue our discussion that we started earlier about the City of Quincy's five-year housing production plan. You may recall we had on our currently in Quincy program Sean along with Emma Battaglia from the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, and we'll hope to have her back in the future as well. But I thought today we could just delve a little bit deeper into the plan itself and what it means for the city and how it might impact the residents. So Sean, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back, Joe.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, there's a lot to this five-year plan. There's a lot of moving parts to it. There's a lot of statistics. And I thought just it deserved a little more time, you know, to give some details. So before we delve into it, let's do a general overview. What is the housing production plan?
Certainly. Well, like you said, it's a five-year plan, and it has three main components. One is that we analyze current demographics. You know, we want to look at what are the needs of housing in the city. We also look at development constraints and opportunities. And then the final part is to actually put together a set of goals and strategies, you know, action items that then we would propose to take over the following 5 years.
Right. And this is something that's done in every five-year increments, is that right?
Right. And as you mentioned, it does take a long time.
Yeah.
So it is a five-year period. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer to actually do the next plan, so it's not exactly every 5 years that we are able to get a new one done, but we've been doing it for about 15 years now.
Wow.
So this is the third one. And our second one with MAPC, the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, as our partner agency and assisting us with that process.
Yeah. Now the current plan that you're in, when did it start?
That was just a little over 5 years ago. It actually expired in November.
Okay.
But because of the amount of development that we have done and the amount of affordable housing that we've brought online, we're actually in a bit of a grace period right now.
Okay.
So, you know, we're not at risk of not having one, but it'll be nice to have this one certified by the state, hopefully over the summer.
Yeah. Did the 2020 federal census have any impact on this plan?
It will have an impact on the next one.
Okay.
Because we looked at the 2020 data to help inform where we would go with this plan. But,
right.
You know, for the last one, we were looking at the 2010 census.
Yes.
So at that point, it was pretty stale.
Yeah.
So to now to have what, you know, albeit as two-year-old data at this point, is still the most current data that we have. And certainly with the population increase that we saw, you know, Quincy grew significantly faster over the past 10 years than it did the 10 years before that.
Yeah.
So that's something that we take into consideration. And of course, now that we're over the 100,000 mark, you know, that's a significant change too, and we'll provide the city with some options to apply for some additional grant funding as well to help us with this.
So what's kind of the ultimate goal of the plan? What do you hope to come out in the end?
Well, the name of the plan is called Housing Quincy, as opposed to just calling it the Quincy Housing Production Plan.
Okay.
It gives it a little bit, you know, more of a feel of what it's all about, which is to house Quincy. And so I know that that's sort of broad, but, you know, the focus is really on affordable housing as opposed to market rate, although that is a component as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, theoretically, the more market rate housing that's built, it should stabilize all rents, you know, across the board.
Supply and demand, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it comes down to. But there's an additional focus on affordable housing with a housing production plan, and that's based on guidance from the state. Really, the point is to help communities that are not at their 10% threshold for affordable housing to help them get there. Now, for Quincy, we're there, so our focus will be more on maintaining that 10% threshold.
Okay.
But it is still a focus on affordable housing in general.
Okay. How do you integrate private developers into this process, Sean? How does that work?
For private, it's a little trickier because it's free market.
They can do what they want, right?
Exactly.
Within
and,
the guidelines.
Exactly. Yeah. And within what zoning allows, too.
Right.
I mean, they can certainly do things by right. If they buy a piece of property and the seller, you know, deeds the deed to them, then it's theirs to do. They can do what they are able to do by right. With zoning and planning board regulations, you know, there are restrictions on certain items. With zoning in particular, the city does have an inclusionary zoning ordinance. So, and this is for all properties, all developers, that if they're developing 10 units or more on a project that requires some sort of zoning relief, then it triggers what we call the IZO, the Inclusionary Zoning Ordinance, and they're required to either produce or provide 10% of those units as affordable or pay into the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which we then use to create affordable housing.
Right.
So if it's a private developer, it would trigger that IZO. If it's a local nonprofit, such as, you know, NeighborWorks, Housing Solutions, QCAP, and the like, they can then apply to the trust for the money that the private developers put into it.
Okay.
So there's
Either way, it's kind of a win-win, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah. So where does kind of the housing stock, if you will, in Quincy stand right now in terms of market versus affordable?
Well, we know that there's not enough housing really of any type. When we look at something called the vacancy rate, which exists for both rental and affordable units. So the vacancy rate for rental units right now is 1.5%. What we would consider to be a healthy rate, sort of nationwide among planners, would be about 7%.
Oh, wow.
So okay. Anything below 7% really signifies a housing shortage. And of course, the lower it gets signifies the greater the shortage.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people might look at 1.5% and think that's good because people want to come to Quincy, so they're renting, you know, as many units as there are. So that, you know, Quincy's a desirable place to come.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But having such low supply drives up rents.
The cost, yeah.
And so, you know, we're at a point now where in some cases, you know, through three or four bedroom unit renting for $3,200, somebody could get a mortgage for that amount per month.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's something that was never the case back in the day. And so when home ownership you know, is roughly the same price as renting, then there's an issue.
Yeah.
There's an equilibrium that's not quite right. And so, you know, more, not just affordable housing, but more rental housing of all types is something that we want to focus on. And then even among home ownership units, the factor that we're looking at now, the vacancy rate among single family homes and home ownership units is about 0.2%.
So
significantly
basically none.
Less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although the healthy vacancy rate among homeowner units is about 2%.
Oh,
so
right.
Significantly less than the rental.
Okay.
So it's all relative.
Right.
But again, you know, we've seen the spike in the cost of single family homes.
Yes.
And condos as well. We saw that between 2003 and 2010, which was the focus period of our plan, because that was when the most recent data was fully available.
Okay.
But we know even during the pandemic, the past 2 years, how things increased even more. You know, a lot of renters that just wanted to get out of that environment.
Yes.
They didn't want to rent. They didn't want to be so close to neighbors. They wanted to have a place of their own. And so ironically, you know, sellers that had single family homes that were thought it was going to be a terrible time to put their house on the market, they realized actually it turned out to be
There were bidding wars and you know, lines at open houses.
It was a seller's market.
Yeah.
It really continues to be.
Yeah.
And so that really ties all back to this, that you know, people see a lot of development that's been done in the city over the past several years, about 4,000 units permitted over the past 5 years, but it's really not enough. And so our focus is to sort of highlight areas where responsible development may be appropriate.
Yeah.
We're not suggesting, you know, massive developments in a residential in a tight-knit neighborhood.
That's the biggest concern that you hear, sure. Yeah,
right. We're not talking about that.
Okay.
We're looking at sites that might be right for larger developments, such as the Watson on East Howard Street, which some people might be familiar with that, across from the shipyard. That was a phenomenal project with NeighborWorks in partnership with a private developer to produce about 140 units of housing. That was an interesting project because it actually flipped the model on its head, where typically the affordable units would be about 10% of a project. In that case, the market rate units were actually the minority in that case.
Yep.
And so it was a really great project where there was no stigmatization of people living in an affordable housing, which that stigma does exist. So that's another thing we try to address is the right development in the right place and try to have a you know, mixed income scenario in cases.
Transit-oriented development, right? That's kind of the key word, TOD.
Absolutely.
Around, we have four T stations in Quincy, so.
Exactly.
And major
commuter
bus
rail.
Yeah,
in one of them. Certainly bus access, and we try to encourage developers to have, you know, bike racks and their developments were appropriate as well. So yeah, anything that's close to a red line station or even a bus stop, we try to encourage development in those places where it makes sense.
Do you think the Fed now is talking about raising interest rates several times this year? Will that, do you think, have an impact on kind of cooling things off a little bit?
I do, but I think Quincy is in the right place at the right time.
Okay.
You know, we've seen a bit of an exodus from Boston.
Yes, yes.
Quincy is, there's a term I've heard called the sort of the Greater Boston Donut.
Okay.
Where Boston's sort of in the middle. A lot of companies that sent people home during the pandemic realized that people can get things done from home, mm-hmm. and now those businesses aren't paying, in some cases, that those downtown rates that are demanded there. So they're realizing, well, hey, we can sort of downsize our physical space, yep. maybe not lay people off, but yep. we don't need people downtown. And so you look at the Fours restaurant, for example, where they had three locations. If you told me 2 years ago that they would be closing one of their locations for good, Boston would have been the last one.
Wouldn't you think, right?
Guessed, yeah.
Right? Right across from the Garden. I mean, it was always
exactly.
hopping. Yeah.
And you look, they closed, and the one in Quincy is
thriving,
booming from what I can see.
Yep.
And so Quincy is just in that sweet spot mm. in the greater Boston area where there's been a bit of an exodus from Boston, also from people that don't want to pay those rents. Even I'm not just talking about businesses, mm-hmm. but renters too.
Sure.
That look at Quincy and say, you know, look at the everything that Quincy has to offer. You know, the arts, culture, the restaurant scene, the thriving downtown education system, the miles and miles of coastline mm-hmm. recreation opportunities for a lot less than what it costs in Boston. So we have not seen any slowdown in projects that are coming before the planning board
that's true,
by any
yeah.
means. So I do think there will be a cooling, but I think Boston's, Quincy's still in that right location,
yeah.
proximity to Boston, but not with the same rents.
For those folks, yes, for those kind of high earners, white collar workers that are coming, it's, like you say, it's ideal, it's a huge savings. But for the other end of the spectrum, for the blue collar working class, we heard this concern up in Somerville just recently with the Green Line extension, increasingly raising the cost of living there. It's happening here and in other, you know, kind of small urban areas around major metropolitan cities too. So this is where this production plan comes into play, right, to help those folks.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what we've found through our analysis is that in terms of income, the largest subpopulation of owners are those making $150,000 or more. These are house by household. The largest subpopulation of renters are those making below $25,000.
Okay.
So there's definitely a disparity.
Huge
there.
Disparity, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's 26% of both populations, and that's the largest subpopulation.
Okay.
Yeah, so we know that, by and large, homeowners typically have higher incomes.
Mm.
But then when you look at the rents that I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. In some cases there are these, double income and no children
yes,
households.
Yes.
Folks that, they might be working 80 hours a week in Boston
sure.
and they
yeah.
don't want to own a home. You know, they don't feel like they have the time, for the maintenance, and they don't mind paying, the rent in the downtown.
Yeah.
Even though they could own a house. But by and large, homeowners do typically have a greater income, which puts more of the burden on these lower income renters that mm-hmm. don't have the opportunity maybe mm-hmm. to buy a house. And so one of the things we're looking at is not only increasing the supply of rental affordable housing, but also trying to increase some of the first-time homebuyer opportunities
yes.
that
okay.
might be available, trying to put some more money towards a program like that, which exists right now. We have two sources of funding. One is, again, that Affordable Housing Trust Fund, mm-hmm. which developers pay into. But then also we have what's called the Federal Home Program, and that's through United States Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Okay.
That's something that we administer in our department. And potentially through this plan, we could provide more funding to try and help more households become first-time homebuyers.
I wonder if folks are aware of that. Hopefully through this program that will help, but how do you do outreach, when it comes to
in
that?
In a variety of ways, we actually have an outreach advocate in our office. There was a recent hire specifically to do that.
Oh, okay.
And through the pandemic, it was just difficult to do those things, obviously,
yeah.
but it was a recent hire. Now that things seem to be getting better, we hope to be able to do more community center type programs with this person
okay.
and attending events that other agencies are putting on. Maybe would get a table
yep.
at their events and just getting out in the community, doing mailings, but also maintaining our website, which is officeofhealthyhomes.org. And that's a site where people can find all about our first-time homebuyer program, our lead paint abatement program,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and our housing rehab program.
Oh,
and
okay.
so all those three will be factored into the plan as well, trying to get more funding and just get the word out about
okay.
those programs.
Quincy is an old city. It's pretty much built out, would you say, kind of bordered by the Atlantic Ocean, so you can't expand that way.
Right.
So how do you deal with that challenge of finding actual space to create new housing?
That's an excellent question. And we've been saying Quincy's been fully built out for a while
yeah.
now.
Yes.
And yet there's still, more development happening.
Right.
So it's a matter of, trying to be creative. In some cases, it's what we call assemblage, is parsing together, you know, different parcels, maybe, you know, buying parcels that are next to each other. They have different owners, but trying to work with those owners and, you know, see if they'd be interested in selling, and that way you can bring two parcels together, and then therefore zoning would allow for, you know, greater development.
A larger development, yeah.
Right. Okay. In some cases we've seen, you know, blasting is done in some of those areas that we do have.
Create the space.
Exactly.
Well, I think it happened up at the
Quarry Street.
Quarry Street
we have
development.
One. Yeah, yeah, right. Right across from the Mignosa's you know, fruit basket there. There's one going up there, and what they had to go into the bedrock, you know.
Right.
That's an option. But certainly with, you know, the Atlantic Ocean on one side, Blue Hills on another.
Another one,
So many parcels that are owned by the state. You know, that's, you can't develop there. We're also looking at sea level rise, which is happening. And there are lots of areas that are, unfortunately, subject to flooding. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to avoid those spaces as well. So, you know, they're not making more land out there. So it is challenging. Maybe looking at some industrial sites. That
the shipyard is probably the most obvious place, right?
It's there, but it is
privately owned.
Yeah. I'm sorry, and so there's only so much, you know, a city can do.
Right.
But there are, you know, opportunities through, you know, developing, you know, public infrastructure and things like that that might make a site more ready for development. You know, and potentially incentivizing developers to do things, and also providing funding for our local nonprofit housing developers. So it all goes into, again, it's a recommendation. It's a five-year plan.
Yeah.
And I do, what I've said to the committee too, is that it is 5 years. You know, we need to be realistic. You know, there are some pie-in-the-sky ideas. And I say that with all due respect. They're great ideas.
Well, brainstorming sometimes can come up with the greatest ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's 5 years.
Yeah.
And we know that in working with some of the nonprofit developers, that to do an affordable housing development could easily take 5 years.
I think the Watson took that long, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. From concept to the ribbon cutting.
Yeah.
That's not unusual to have, you know, to take 5 years for one development.
It's a long time for 140 units, you know, I mean, because the housing need keeps increasing over those 5 years.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So we try to look at what are some realistic action items over a five-year period.
Yeah.
And so we look at things like increasing funding, maybe applying for new grants or trying to increase the amount of grants that we already have, and just looking at other sources, things that we think are realistic within a five-year period.
You mentioned a committee for this plan. So who's on that committee, Sean, and how does that meet?
It's a 9-member advisory committee.
Okay.
And it's actually the first time that we've had a formal advisory committee.
Oh.
And in prior years, we've used in-house staff, which we have people that our experience in this field, certainly, and know how to interpret this data and gather the data. But MAPC had really encouraged us to try to broaden our horizons a little bit and bring some, not necessarily outside influences in, but folks like Beth Anstrolo from QCAP. Obviously, they're one of our community housing development organizations. They have all sorts of programs, and they are the city's designated anti-poverty agency.
Okay.
So having someone like Beth Ann is important. Also, Donna Ackerman from NeighborWorks Housing Solutions.
Yep.
She is the Quincy site director. And then we have planning staff as well, several planning staff. Rob Stevens, my counterpart on the planning division. Sherry Zoe is our housing programs manager. Joe King is one of our planners. Tom Fabrizio, the executive director of the Affordable Housing Trust. And then a couple of other members from the trust as well. So Councillor Chuck Phelan, for example. Is one, and Reverend Sheldon Bennett. So it's a pretty good mix of certainly housing advocates, housing planners, and we think it's a really great team that we've brought together.
Also, these folks have a lot of empirical data from the city. They've been around for a very long time, and they come from different walks of the community as well, so I'm sure they're able to bring a different perspective as to what the needs actually are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny because with you know, Beth Ann and Sheldon Bennett, they were around prior to the existence of the IZO to begin with. You know, they were here back in the 90s when that was being pitched to Mayor Sheets. And then Mayor Phelan had made some changes through the City Council and Mayor Koch as well. So, you know, it's been a long time process. These folks have the institutional knowledge. Rob and I, surprisingly, combined have about 35 years of experience in the planning.
Well, you started when you were 10.
Well, exactly. It helps.
But
you're right with that, you know, diversity of experience.
Yeah,
it's been very helpful, and it's been a really exciting and engaging process.
I would think, yeah. Probably one of the biggest changes comes from the cultural makeup of the city, right, Sean? And how does this plan address that?
Exactly. We have seen through the census data that came out that the minority population has certainly increased, and among the Asian community in particular, we know that's at about 31% of the population right now, which had been, you know, we'd been saying 20 to 25% for a while. We know through the most recent data that it's over 30% now. And so having Sherry Zoe as our housing programs manager, as a member of the advisory committee, working with MAPC and partner organizations like CORI, Quincy Asian Resources, and BCNC, the Boston Chinatown Neighborhood Center, as partner agencies helping us get the word out there. When we have these public engagement opportunities, we also translate everything that goes out. So we did a survey back in December, and that was translated, made available to our Asian-speaking population. And also the webinar that we did in December was had simultaneous translation available.
Oh, okay.
So not only could people hear what we were saying,
yes,
but also they could, you know, interact and ask questions that way. And we'll continue to do that throughout this process.
So there will be more public engagement?
We do. We have, it's not confirmed yet. Yeah. It's confirmed but not scheduled yet, I should say.
So it will happen. We just don't know when yet.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we'll have a second community engagement session, which will be essentially an online survey with some slides, and it's a more interactive process than just a straight survey. And that will talk about some of the goals and strategies that we have, and we'll be looking for feedback on that, as well as a second webinar, public webinar, which will be held. We're shooting for the end of April for that.
All right, very good. Is this costing the city anything to produce this plan, Sean?
It's not costing city taxpayers a dime.
Yeah.
And it's coming through a state grant, obviously from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but also through a federal grant as well. We're using some admin funds from one of our existing grants to pay for MAPC's time, and of course our local in-house staff time is at no additional cost to city taxpayers, which I think is an important note.
Because I agree.
It's not cheap.
Yeah.
You know, MAPC has a lot of incredible data sources that have been invaluable for this process. It comes with a cost, but not to city taxpayers, and we're very proud of that.
I think you're right. I think it's important to point that out, actually. Folks are already getting a lot of the bang for their taxpayer dollar through this process. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about housing aging in place. Probably one of the fastest growing populations, right? It'll be 65 and older.
It is the fastest growing population.
The fastest? Okay.
Yeah, we've noticed that the 65.
The closer it gets, the younger it looks, by the way. But yeah.
It is true. We did notice that through this last data gathering process that senior population is the fastest growing. Conversely, the younger population is the slowest growing.
And that's nationwide, too.
It is. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And in fact, and I'm glad you brought that up, because MAPC. It encouraged us to look at what we call context communities. So every step along the way, it hasn't been just, you know, what does Quincy look like, what is Quincy doing? It's what do our surrounding communities, and context communities. So they might not be exactly contiguous to us, but other communities in the greater Boston area that have similarities to Quincy.
Okay.
And what we found along the way is that, you know, Quincy is right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not the only ones that have a housing shortage. This isn't the only place where housing is expensive. You know, it's a lot across the board. And that senior population, same thing. It is the fastest growing population, and we are seeing younger people moving to less expensive, you know, places, and just families that aren't having as many children as they used to.
Right. Colleges are feeling the impact.
Exactly. And that baby boomer population is getting older.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things we're looking at is, you know, empty nester scenarios where people might be living alone. We know that there are a lot of seniors living alone. They might be in these big houses that are expensive to maintain.
Yep.
In some cases, they're perfectly happy. They're content. They want to stay there.
Great. They can afford to stay there. So great.
That's wonderful. But in many cases, they are looking for other opportunities, maybe some senior communities. And there are some out there, but again, not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are going to recommend additional affordable housing opportunities for seniors through this plan, as well as I mentioned for the younger folks, maybe some first-time homebuyer opportunities. But in addition to just the need for more affordable housing, there's also a need for housing rehabilitation for these single-family homes where, you know, maybe there's been deferred maintenance over time.
Again, Quincy's an old city. It's not unusual to find a house from 1900, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have, a significant portion of the housing stock that was built pre-1940.
Yeah.
But also, others, along the way. But we know that it's not cheap to replace a roof or siding or put in energy-efficient windows. But what is really important to know, and I hope every senior in the city is listen to this, is that we can help them and do those projects. In fact, we can replace a roof and siding and windows. We can do all of that at no cost to them up front.
Wow.
So that's not to say it doesn't have to be paid back eventually.
Yeah.
But we can do all of those things. 0% interest, deferred loans that do not have to be paid back to the city until that house is sold or transferred. So zero.
It's huge.
Zero cost up front.
Allows them to stay in their house. Make it more energy efficient, so it's more affordable for them.
Exactly.
And not have to put money out front. Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that the house is then going to be worth more.
Correct.
By doing
for resale
those
value.
Projects.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so we've talked to some seniors that have been hesitant about that because they look at it as a burden on their estate essentially.
No,
understand. They see it as potentially less money, less inheritance for their children, next of kin. And so my counter argument has been, but if you're doing the project and the house is worth more, then they actually might end up with more money for the inheritance because that resale value after you pay back the city, the loan that did the work, there'll still be money left over. And you got a house that is now up to code and safer and more efficient and energy efficient, hopefully less costly to maintain.
Yeah, and it's things that they may have to do to the home before they're able to sell it. So they'd have to put money out of their pocket to take care of those projects, or money they'd have to take off the purchase price, in a negotiating scenario. So,
exactly. So it's a really a win-win program. And in addition to the things I mentioned, there are also other things like, electrical and plumbing issues to bring those things up to code.
Okay.
Putting in a handicap ramp, fixing stairs that might be, crumbling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a whole host of things that we can do really from the, chimney down to the foundation that we can do. And so I'd encourage folks to visit our website, officeofhealthyhomes.org. Go to the city's website and go to the Department of Planning and Community Development, do a Google search, or just, call our office and 617-376-1362. We'll get you there.
Okay.
But I would encourage every senior that has any sort of housing rehab issue that might, need fixing to give us a call. We'd love to help you. We're not talking about patching things necessarily. We really want to get in there and if you need a new roof, we want to do the whole roof.
Okay.
We don't want to do a patch. And that's really not what the program is designed for either. We're looking for
doing it
the right way, get one and done,
yep.
and not have to worry about it again.
Good to know. All right. Do you think there needs to be more public-private partnership development going on, maybe with other agencies, Sean, that don't exist right now?
It never hurts.
Yeah.
You probably can never do too much.
Okay.
Have too many of those partnerships. I think we've done more of it recently, and I think again that Watson was a great project where NeighborWorks was partnering with a private developer. It was a project that NeighborWorks couldn't have done on its own without that private investment. And likewise for Wynn Development, which was the private arm there, Wynn couldn't have done it without NeighborWorks because of some of the ways those tax credit programs work. You need a nonprofit partner.
Yeah,
the private
company wouldn't qualify for those.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we've seen that with senior housing developments in particular.
Really?
There seems to be a lot of partnership with those types of projects, not necessarily in Quincy, but hopefully through this plan, we might be able to draw in more of those relationships.
Okay. So what, I guess, is the next step?
The next step is the advisory committee continues to meet. We have looked at some of the housing constraints and opportunities.
Mm.
So that's that second part of the plan. We're tying that up right now, and then we'll be looking at some of the goals and strategies moving forward. That will take a couple of weeks. Once we're done with that, we'll have a draft plan coming out for public comment.
Okay.
And so that will be that April timeframe that I was talking about, a second public engagement strategy, or opportunity rather, as well as a second webinar. And then in May and June, we hope to present this to the Planning Board and City Council, which both of those bodies need to adopt this plan before it goes to the state for certification.
I see.
And we hope that will happen by that summer recess for the city council, and then off to the state for certification in over the summer, if all goes well.
And will there need to be a financial appropriation, or just a vote on the plan itself?
It's a vote on the plan itself.
Okay.
And then any appropriations would come in stages
as
we
go
through the 5-year process.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Thanks so much. Anything else we should share right now with folks?
Not at this time, but yeah. I would love to come back and talk about it as the process unfolds.
Please do. Yeah, we'd love to kind of follow this along if you don't mind and let folks know about it. I think it's important. I think a lot of folks have questions about development, about housing. There are new people coming into the city all the time that are probably facing obstacles, you know, to finding housing. So to let them know that this exists and there is help available, I think is important.
Agreed. Appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. Our pleasure. If you could just reiterate again that website and phone number for folks.
Yeah, so it's the officeofhealthyhomes.org is where they'd find information about the first-time home buyer program,
okay.
Housing rehab, and also the lead paint abatement program, which is great for any households with children under 6.
Yes.
That is a 5-year forgivable loan. So that's
super.
Actually nothing to pay back if you stay in the house for 5 years.
Okay.
Also a very, very crucial program. And then as far as the housing production plan itself, that's actually a different website. It's kind of a long website.
All right.
So
I just send it to the city website.
It's the city website. It's actually hosted at mapc.org is sort of the main hosting location
okay.
for the housing production plan. So Google to MAPC Housing Quincy
mm-hmm.
will get you there
okay.
pretty quickly, or the mapc.org website, and then do a search for Housing Quincy. We'll get you to that site, which talks about updates to the plan, talks about what is a housing production plan, what is affordable housing. There's also a link there where folks can sign up to receive e-updates.
Great.
So, you know, as we're talking about this public engagement session or the second webinar, if you sign up for the e-news updates,
you'll be notified,
you'll be notified directly through
okay,
that process.
Okay, great. And then phone number on your office is?
Sure, again, so the main office number is 617-376-1362.
Okay.
And from that main number, folks can be directed to the right place.
All right. Good to see you, Sean. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
You're very welcome. Thank you for watching us here at AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano. We'll see you next time.